a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12 Pack Radio. Get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12 Pack Radio, where I've had a little bit of wine. It's Sunday night. What are you going to do? Right. This is Brian Cogger. Thank you for joining us. We're doing a simulcast again. That's the beauty of video, Rob. Like, you can't do anything about it.
We're doing it live. We're the wine podcast. Is that who we're not the podcast of the people. We are. The wine and cheese podcast.
The coastal elite, Rob, moving over to the Big Ten. We're the coastal elite.
Oh, yeah, the bi-coastal elite.
Thank you for everybody for joining us. We're doing simulcast. We're on YouTube and we're on every podcast catcher that's ever been invented in the history of man. This is Brian Cogger. Thank you for joining us. We're a Sharp College Football Podcast. We're going to talk about USC and UCLA this week, which I'm really excited about because it's two teams that just have a tremendous amount of upside. I mean, both of them do. And Alex Grinch is the defensive coordinator. So we'll get into that. And we're talking about downside.
Still,
that's right. I joined as always by Rob Aaron from Sharp College Football. What's going on, Rob?
I'm really excited for these teams. I mean, I think everyone sort of, and I just did the USC advanced stats preview on Sharp College Football's YouTube, which is also where you can find this as well. And then, this UCLA team is really intriguing and I think is not getting nearly enough attention. So I am really excited to talk about them coming into this year.
Yeah. All the hipsters that cover college football are like, oh, this Oregon State team is really, they're like feeling themselves, like looking at themselves in the mirror and I'm like, no, Chip Kelly has proven it and done it.
it turns out like Chip Kelly may have actually solved his like kryptonite problems since he came to UCLA, which has been hiring a defensive coordinator.
Yeah. Well, I had other things. We'll get to that too, because holy Moses. I'm trying to think, there's really been no news. I mean, ACC's been looking at Stanford and Cal. And
they're only one vote shy. That's like,
gosh, it's so bizarre. Okay, so I should admit this. So I saw you tweet about, like, you tweeted about this where you're like, all right, the Big Ten, right? You have USC's playing Rutgers and Arizona and Arizona State are playing UCF. The thing, though, Rob, is all the teams in between those two coasts. Like,
that is a somewhat valid point. It is still, I live in Columbus, Ohio. It is still a hike to Columbus from Los Angeles. It's going to be a hike to Iowa from Los Angeles, right? I mean, now, at least if you're like in the Big 12, you know, Big 12 land, like, you know, you just got to fly across New Mexico to get to Texas Tech. And I guess, you know, the Dallas flight's not very, you know, terribly long from any of those places. But yeah, I mean, it drives me nuts though, because people like they can't resist some attempt at a pun or like sports, like writers and like journalists in general and sports writers in particular cannot resist puns. It's like as if you like threw a ball in front of a bunch of golden retrievers and they're just like, oh my God, like, wait a minute. Like that's the Atlantic Coast Conference. Like this can't be real. It's in the name. It's like, oh yeah, I got it. Right. Like
Big Ten. How many teams are in that conference?
You are aware that the Big Ten includes Los Angeles and New Jersey now, right? Like,
yeah, the Big 12 literally had like 9 teams for like 5 years.
Right.
So let's not, like, I'm pretty sure that that has flown out the window years ago.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't know. Like, whatever. Like, I mean, I like Stanford. It's a beautiful campus. I like Cal. Like, those are the two campuses. Oh, like, I do think that Stanford's commitment to athletics is a little bit more serious than Cal's. So I would like.
I mean, Cal has some serious Olympic sports. I mean, if you're really into swimming, Stanford's got great swimming too. Polo. I mean, yeah, Stanford has a sailing team.
That's true. So they're very good, Rob. They try to push him on Pac-12 Media Day about 10 years ago. Right? Because the thing is, you're getting real credible reports on the Northwest schools.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing. about Oregon State and Washington State, and that's worrisome to me because I really feel so, like I was joking about the hipster vibe of college football, but that's kind of the quaintness of the sport. You kind of want that, and the two teams that have really tried and really made creative hires, like, there's just been no stories about where they're going to go. I'm just assuming in my mind, I have already plugged them into whatever the Mountain West Big Pac-12 conglomerate is going to be. It just seems like that's where they're going to go.
Well, this is one of those ones where, I know that The Athletic had a piece and they were talking about the TV overlords are betting on is that people are going to, they may lose some super interested fans, from the small teams, the non-casual fans from the smaller teams. But what they're hoping to gain is the casual fans who are not really that into college football, that they're going to tune in more for Washington versus Michigan than they might not tune in, otherwise. Or USC, Ohio State. I get it. That's a big matchup that if you can put on the radar more often. But I always think of when people talked about when people talk about cutting down on the number of at large bids in the NCAA tournament or cutting down on auto bids or something. I'm just you guys know what makes this why people like this, right? People like this because people like rooting for underdogs. They like coming into the season and not necessarily knowing the full story, right? They like being able to pick a team and have some team really overachieve and suddenly end up on the national stage. They I think one of that is one thing that college football does much better than the NFL. And look, the NFL is a money-making machine. So college football isn't even on their level of money-making. But it's something that I think college football and certainly college basketball do better, which is just a constantly and look, the NFL has some parity, but the constantly changing, kaleidoscope of teams and players that are hit on people's radar and end up sort of catching the national. Last year it was TCU, right? A couple years from now, TCU's not making that run, And I say that I don't know. I think what's fascinating out of all of this, and the reason why I always get don't watch the pieces on the board, figure out who the actual players are, is that ESPN and Fox are perfectly willing to pay 8/10 of the remaining Pac-12 $30 million a year. They are perfectly willing to do that. And everyone's sitting around there and they're just saying how did this happen? Right? The Pac-12 wasn't worth it. They could only get that deal from Apple. I'm just guys, watch and figure out who the actual players are. The players are ESPN and Fox, right? And they were willing to shred the Pac-12 so that Apple would not get a deal. And they're perfectly willing to actually pay out a deal that the Pac-12, at least this year, would have taken, right?
And guaranteed, right? Guaranteed money.
Yeah.
You don't have to sell tickets. Yeah. You don't have to get your friends to convince their friends. here's the money.
They would absolutely. And it's a little frustrating to see because the college football playoff, it's basically keeping Apple out of the college football playoff contract when that one comes up again. They don't want Apple and they're bidding for that. So it's frustrating to see something you love and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you do, right? You were into Pac-12 football, torn up for, literal business reasons, right? Anybody's going to make any more money. It's just we're keeping Apple out for one more round because I don't think it's going to stay in the long run.
Just a quick clarification on that point, right? And I forget who asked me this, but it was a good question where Apple had so much money.
Yeah.
Right. More money than Disney, more money than Fox.
Their market capitalization is they dwarf.
It's a trillion. I remember when it was hey, will they reach $1 trillion? Right. And they're yep.
Yeah.
EMOS.
Yeah.
We got you. So is it more that it was because ESPN and Fox were already in on the Big Ten, the Big 12, they already settled that.
And they likely overpaid to keep Apple out. Right.
So if you're Apple, is it just the fact that the Pac-12 isn't worth it?
I mean,
like, to overpay?
I think Apple, I mean, so look, they certainly, I mean, yeah, they could have come back in, and they did. They came up from, they were at 23 million guaranteed. They came up to 25 million guaranteed in their final offer. But I think if you're like everybody in the, you know, the way this is going to work in the future, when you are on a streaming service, and guess what? You're going to have subscription numbers that you need to help hit. Like, that's the way the business model is going to work, right? It's the way they ran it with MLS too. And I think that what Apple's done is, look, they definitely invested some money off the bat. You have to invest big money to start to, like, you know, actually get some content out there. And, like, they weren't going to be able to Netflix it and just buy people's old content. Like, everybody wants to monetize their own old content now, and they haven't quite figured out how to do that well. But the, like, so they, you know, they're in for a bunch of money on stuff like The Morning Show and Ted Lasso. I mean, all that stuff, right? But Apple seems to have pulled back on sports and played it really straight. I mean, I think they played it really straight with MLS. And I think they played it really straight with the Pac-12. And I mean, the fact that they got outbid by ESPN and Fox on the big on the SEC and the Big Ten tells you they, and maybe the Big 12 too, tells you they played it really straight again. You know, like, they were not going to come off their numbers too much in order to get a deal done. And ESPN and Fox, I mean, I do think that now ESPN and Fox, I think, have more of an incentive, because I think part of what is holding, or at least staunching the bleeding on cable subscribers leaving cable, is sports. Right? Sports helps keep people, like, if that starts to break up, you're going to, like, you could see that those cable subscriber numbers dwindle even further. But there was a report, and I mean, this is really frustrating, and it's been confirmed in a couple of places. And Washington State's president went on the record, I think talking to John Canzano about this, was last year in the fall, the Pac-12 had a $30 million per year deal from ESPN. And several Pac-12 presidents told Kliakoff that they would not accept any. They thought the valuation was $50 million a year, and they needed to be closer to the Big Ten. So as much as people want, like, don't get me wrong, Kliakoff did some dumb stuff, but as always, like, it comes back to the just idiots were the Pac-12 CEO president's group. I mean, you could think, like, I mean, it probably wasn't Washington State. It probably wasn't Oregon State that had an overinflated idea of their worth.
It wasn't the NorCal schools, right? Because, like, they were happy to, you know, go get along. Probably wasn't Utah.
Right. Probably wasn't Arizona.
And like, let's be honest, it probably wasn't Colorado at the time with the coach that they hired, and the fact that they haven't made a Sweet 16 and since I've been born, probably.
Right. It's been a really, I mean, long time. It was probably Oregon and Washington, which is mind blowing.
And the LA schools.
Like, well, no, because this is after the LA schools left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So after the LA schools left, ESPN came in with an offer after the negotiating window was over and said, we'll give you $30 million per. And yeah, like, it's got to be, it had to be Oregon and Washington. And what's frustrating about that is, you know, they got stoned by the Big Ten, and they got probably got an idea of their valuations. Now, oddly enough, Oregon and Washington are worth more in the Pac-12 to a TV buyer than they are in the Big Ten, because they have rivalries and you're going to get better, more tuning in. Like, so, like, Oregon and Washington would be worth slightly. And this isn't me saying this. This is Bob Thompson said this. He's like, who's the former Fox sports executive. That's on Twitter. You know, Oregon, Washington are probably worth more to the Pac-12 than they are in the Big Ten. But you know, they knew a number, which is probably around $30 million a year, which is right where they ended up at with the Big Ten. Less than half of what the Big Ten's revenue, like, paying out to everybody else. But it was probably them that pushed back on it. It's so frustrating, because, like, they went back to ESPN, and ESPN, like, cause you know what it's, I mean, like, I do negotiations on deals. Like, if somebody comes in with a bonkers, just a crazy number, you can just torpedo the deal, because they're not going to take you seriously, and they're not going to think you're going to be able to come to an agreement. Right.
Yeah.
Like, if you're 20 million apart, how are you going to get to a number?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just, like, I saw that story and I thought, oh, yeah, that sounds about right. Like,
you know. Stupid.
that sounds very right. Okay. Well, it's interesting to see what will happen. I am more interested in what happens to Washington State and Oregon State.
Yeah.
Because I just think, you know, like, all right, ACC takes up Stanford and Cal. Am I going to watch those games? No. Like, I'm just not. I just don't think that those teams are serious about football. And it's interesting kind of what Stanford was doing, but it seems like out of necessity they had to be interesting. And
yeah,
I'm way more interested in what Oregon State and Washington State are doing. I'm more interested in what Colorado and Utah are doing. I think the Arizona schools have made interesting and obviously the Oregon and Washington and the USC. It just seems like of all the teams in the Pac-12,
right?
Like those NorCal schools, it's just like good luck. You know, I mean, I hope they get a deal. I hope that the football, but like, again, I don't know if you ask the Cal administration right now or the Stanford administration right now, less so Stanford, but more so Cal. Do you want to have football? I just think that the answer is probably no.
No, I mean, the only reason the Cal's going to say yes is because they got all that debt.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't, yeah. I don't know how those deals are structured. I don't know if that money kicks over to main campus if your athletic department folds.
Just put it in an omnibus.
Or if it somehow, ends up on like some rule where like the state, like because it's a state entity, it can't default or something like that. But like, holy moly, like that's like the only reason like Cal would truly, truly keep it going. Right. It honestly feels like it's like, man, join the Ivy League, you know, like stop offering scholarships and join the Ivy League, man. Like, why not? Right.
Two of the best schools in the world.
Right.
Right. Like,
right.
I mean, I always feel so bad because I dump on Cal all the time. Cal is an exceptionally incredible, productive, amazing university that anybody that gets a scholarship there like should like frame the offer. Like, yeah. That is such a such a great university.
Do not like listen, like I know UCLA and Washington also are prestigious universities. Like I'm sorry, but like Cal puts up Nobels, my friends. Like not that you guys don't, but y'all ain't in the same league and Nobel prizes. So don't get me wrong. Like there's some nice stuff you guys do and I'm not taking away from it. Like, I mean, I'm proud of Arizona's AAU status. And so I'm sure like Colorado alums and Utah alums, like those things matter. But like, yeah, like just be frank about like who you are and what you want to be. I don't know. I mean, like I can't, it is hard to imagine. It is mind-blowing to me to imagine ESPN paying $30 million a year for Boston College Cal to a game that if it's on the East Coast, maybe too early for Cal fans to watch, and a game on the West Coast, no one in Boston staying up for.
Yeah, we'll like, I mean, I think they're just scrapping, right? I mean, I don't think that they're anticipating that. But again, when you look back at what was offered, right? Like now you're up a creek and that's
I mean, what's funny is like ESPN's in a spot where like they want to get this done. This is only happening because ESPN wants to get some additional West Coast Prime inventory, right? And they're willing to pay the $30 million a year for it. And Fox went in and just cracked the whip on the Big Ten and basically said, like, here's your money. Like, you're everybody fall in line because we're the gravy train, right? Like, but everybody in the Big Ten is really happy. They're about to get bonkers money, right? Like, that is not the case for the holdouts are Clemson, Florida State, and North Carolina State. Those are your holdouts. The teams that would very much like to be not in that conference anymore. We would very much like to be in before they say yes to anything, if they're going to stay in the ACC, to have a renegotiation of revenue, right? Like they're going to hold it up and they're going to try to gum up ESPN and gum up Cal and Stanford. I'm not sure that ESPN is able to get that one across, right? Because I think that, like, I think there are some people that are annoyed with them right now for being stuck in that ACC deal.
Lord. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you want us to do this now? Yeah, how about the 20 years that we're locked into your stupid contract?
Yeah. Good luck. So maybe they're not able to get their, to get their everybody in line. That's better for Oregon State and Washington State because at least they have Cal and Stanford to help build around. And then I think you could have the conversation about Cal and Stanford and Oregon State and Washington State maybe raiding the Mountain West in a year when the Mountain West, I think their grant of rights expires. And they could, all those, like those teams, I think could get out. It's either their grant of rights expires or they would have a minimal exit fee. And then they could get teams and sort of like keep the Pac-10, Pac-12 branding, yeah, and
that'd
logo.
Be a good, I mean, that'd be a fun conference. So those four teams and like the best of the Mountain, yeah, West, like, sure. Like,
I mean,
I wouldn't watch it, but I mean, that's not true. I would watch it because it's on, but it wouldn't be appointment television.
I am only watching it if Wyoming's included, and there's like no way that's going to happen. Although it's funny, like, so the Wyoming's like in a unique spot because the state legislates the only four-year school, and the state has like, it's not quite like a Saudi fund, but they have the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, which has a bunch of dollars in it. And Wyoming's athletic director said basically, like, we could be in a position to take less TV money to stay in a good conference because that we could make it up out of the legislature. And I'm like, this is, I mean, it's one of those ones where it's like,
through that, like,
I know, I was just like, it's one of those ones where it's just like, wait a minute, I thought this was like small government, like the land of small government. What are we, and we're just like, nope, we're like, no, well, welfare for the football team, done.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. You know, I'm sure those stories will continue. We have USC, we have UCLA, fascinating teams. We're going to break down each roster, from defense and offense. We're trying to go too deep to kind of looking to see what these teams are, and we'll do it right after this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. And let's do UCLA because it's like,
oh, this is, look, the most exciting thing on the menu. Don't get me wrong. USC is like the obvious. It's the obvious thing on the menu that everyone's told you about already. Everyone in town knows about.
Yeah. Sometimes the little brother gets a scholarship to Harvard, right? And that little brother gets signed to some like crazy hedge fund. And he's just calling you up and being like, hey, big brother, what's going on? What's going, like, you know, do you want to come over to the beach house? And I feel that, look, well, we'll get to USC. The fact that UCLA is in a position where they can really cause some damage. And I think one of the things for me and for this podcast, Rob, is I've been pretty hesitant on UCLA over the last couple of years, just because Chip Kelly's roster management is not even secretly garbage. It is openly garbage. Like there's just a lot of things that most legitimate college football coaches would not do or let slide that he has. And each year I look at that team and go, this offensive line is stupid.
It always works though.
Yeah, I exactly. Right. And that's going to be one of my points here. It's like,
it doesn't matter.
They're like Utah. Like, it's just, it's like Utah's linebackers. Like, it's not the same level, but like, they're not going to be great, but they're going to do just enough, right, to get them to a position where they can, where it's not going to be a massive hole.
I feel like every year I look at the roster and I'm like, wait a minute, last year that defensive lineman was an offensive lineman. That offensive lineman was a defensive lineman. I'm like, what are we doing here? It's like constant. And you know what? I mean, it hasn't worked out on the defensive line, but it's mostly worked out for the offensive line.
Yeah. It's crazy. And then every year, and I'm usually right on this, I look at the defense and I go, holy smokes. Like, this is garbage. And, you know, like, obviously what happened with Musgrave was a problem for the university in many ways, obviously from a personal standpoint. Like, it's awful when you lose like a defensive coordinator, and like, you know, obviously the family and all that goes, like, it highlights that football is more than just the sport. It's personal, and all these for the most part, it seemed like you have a lot of really good leaders that really do pour their hearts into coaching and to football. And it seemed like the Musgrave family was like that. At the same time, I do think the way that UCLA handled that was inappropriate, right? Like,
yeah,
if your defensive coordinator isn't going to be there, fine. I mean, you don't have to say why.
Right.
And they didn't. And this is the thing that's so frustrating with Kelly, because it's like Chip Kelly doesn't release a depth chart. He doesn't update his roster.
Right.
He doesn't let people watch his practices. Right. He doesn't tell you when his defensive coordinator is not the defensive coordinator. And you're just going, like, you know, all the things that I just said of coaches pouring themselves into students, you know, coaches high, like, really loving the game, like, the way that Chip Kelly operates is the exact opposite of that, where you just go, like, it's a game, man. Like, it's football. You're Chip. It's not like you're this Burge. It's not like you're Dillingham, a 32-year-old head coach that has to prove himself in the world. You're freaking Chip Kelly at UCLA. Nobody cares. Right. Like, just put a depth chart out there.
Right.
Put your you can just say, hey, you know, our defensive coordinator is stepping away for a bit. And, like, fine. Okay. Like,
right.
I think everybody's pretty good. I say all this because the defense has been trash for like 4 years, and this might be the year, Rob, where there might be some heft to it. And that's interesting.
I mean, obviously a tragic situation. If there is a silver lining, it is that Chip Kelly had to go back and make a hire again. And I don't think that Musgrave was working out. And I think that's okay to say. And I think he actually made a really good hire. I say that as, like, listen, the guy has not called plays before, but, like, Michigan hired a guy off the Ravens staff who hadn't called plays before. He was pretty good, right? Like, I mean, some of the NFL, the guys that have come back from the NFL, it hasn't always worked. It didn't work with Kerry Combs at Ohio State. But there's a decent track record of guys coming straight from the NFL without having called plays, particularly if you're coming off a really good NFL defense like the Ravens, and being pretty good in college. And UCLA, it's like, I'm with you. I'm not sure that it's the most talented defense in the league, but they've still got some guys, right? Like, they still got some, like, they still, if you look at the past couple seasons, I don't think that there is a reasonable argument that they have ever played up to their talent level. And just playing up to their talent level would be remarkable for them, right?
Yeah. And, like, look, a talent level is 40. Like, let's call a spade here. They have not recruited exceptionally well at the defensive level. But we're not, like, I don't think you and I, Rob, are arguing for them to be a top 15 defense. We just want you to not suck. And, like, as an RO in Musgrave, like, just on the field, the production of those units – we're bad. I mean, and it really set UCLA back, and you saw that multiple times. Like, I mean,
yeah,
because they had a top 10.
Yeah, they were number eight overall in beta rank. Like, they had a sneaky again. I mean, Kelly, like, last year, it got kind of, again, like, kicked under the radar because their defense was so bad. And also, as good as their offense was, it wasn't like, you know, Tennessee or something like that, but it's still a really good offense. Like, Kelly's been kicking around in like the 20s, you know, on offense. Like, this was one of his best offenses he's had at USC or at UCLA. And I just, like, yeah, if they could get to like a middle of the road, slightly worse than average Power 5 defense, like, in the Pac-12, you're cooking. Right. Like,
yeah,
like, I mean, like, there, but, like, I think, like, they made a hire. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. Like, we talked about this, like, before, like, Oregon State is the sort of, like, everyone split zone duo, you know, like, every national podcast is like high on the Beavs with DJU. We were talking about we are too. Everyone is.
This is a better team.
UCLA could be sneaky really good and, like, mess up some people's seasons or go on their own run.
Yeah, I've bet the over. I bet them to win the conference. They have a stupid schedule. Like, just and that's the thing too. It's like, it was interesting because my friend was shooting me the odds. Like, you know, I said, why is Utah plus 600? Like, this, they're a two-time champion. I'm like, look at their schedule.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
the difference here. Where this team is really good. And, like, and here's the thing. So, I mean, just going through,
well, their schedule's sets them up.
It's stupid. It's so dumb.
Oh man, UCLA. Holy moly. Like we're that's it. After this, like we are sort of small but fierce. We have a relatively smallish following, mostly among Pac-12 fans, and then a large following of like college football writers and stuff. And like that's it. We are going to talk like it's. I'm going to like put my agenda of like making everyone talk about UCLA for like the last 2 weeks before the season starts. Like, oh, you fools, you missed this.
Here's the thing is that for the last couple of years, UCLA's season win total has been like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
With a worse roster with a tougher schedule. And Kelly has figured it out.
What's their win total this year?
8.5. 8.5.
Did that get bet up or?
I don't think. I mean, it might have been 8. It might have started at 8, but 8.5 is where it's at right now. And like, let's talk through the offense because is this offense going to be as good as a 5-year DTR with Zach Charbonnet? No. So we should take a look at what this offense was and then take a look at what it could be for now. Yeah. So what did the numbers talk about them?
So UCLA graded out at number 8 overall offensively last season. They were number 5 overall in drive efficiency. They were excellent. I mean, and this is something that goes to DTR finally figuring it out a bit, you know, like in being less of a turnover machine, being able to take what was given to him. And also, I mean, like still being able to be quite effective with his legs. So number 5 overall, they were 13 in explosive drives. I mean, a lot of this is like, man, they've got like Chip Kelly does have one of the best run schemes in college football. I mean, hands down, right? Like, a lot of their big plays came like either were on the off of, you know, the run or keying off of the run with the tight ends. Number 11 in play efficiency. They did a very good job at their yards per play outside of explosives. 11 in negative drives. This was the big one that tells you how much DTR matured. Fewer turnovers, fewer 3-and-outs, fewer dumb things going on. Number 4 in effective rush and 29 in effective pass. And this is where I think that sort of like, it's where I say like we should have some optimism about, because they're not going to ask, like, look, DTR was a warrior at points last season. Like he took shots in that Oregon game and kept them in it, right? Like, you know, I thought for parts of last year DTR was willing that offense, but they're still going to have a really good run game. Like they could have 3 defensive linemen starting on the offensive line and it'd probably be fine. Right. And like, I think that, I think they're going to, and like, if it's Dante Moore or whether it's somebody else, like, I don't think they're going to be asked to do a ton, there. Right. I mean, I guess that like when it comes down to it is like, I just think offensively what they have, you know, like, when we look at them, like we've only got them projected at 22 overall. Some of that is because their defense has just been so horrendous. Their special teams also were pretty bad last season.
Yeah.
And they've only got 54% coming back on the offense, but like a lot of that is losing, you know, Charbonnet, losing, you know, DTR, as well as the tight end. Like I like, you know, like I, at this point, like, I don't care who they have it. Whoever shows up at running back will be fine.
Right. Like, yeah. Well, that's the thing is that they're good.
Right.
Like, yeah. So, we should start at the quarterback because obviously DTR, like a 7-year starter or whatever at UCLA. The thing with the quarterback this year is you take a look at the other teams in the Pac-12 and you have Caleb, Caleb Williams. I'm like in basketball phase right now. Caleb Williams.
We don't even Caleb do basketball.
Love, Lord Almighty. Yeah, he's not even going to be good. Caleb Williams. You take a look at like Bo Nix at Oregon. You take a look at what happens at Utah. Any of those guys go down, and it's a massive problem.
Yeah.
At UCLA, you have Dante Moore, who is like a top 3 legit 5-star quarterback that I think anybody that follows college football recruiting is like, no, that guy's the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
He's pushing Ethan Garbers, who has, like, you know, not like four-star, he was part of the 17 four-star.
Somehow didn't get forced to move to tight end or something.
Yeah, exactly. They ended up, like, you know, going everywhere else. So, you know, an okay fallback. Then you have Colin Schley, a quarterback that was extremely productive in the MAC.
Yeah.
So, like, you actually have a decent depth. Like, none of these guys are going to be DTR in his fifth year, but you have a high floor. And if somebody gets hurt, you still have a high floor. And that's interesting for UCLA because the running game, like you mentioned, is going to be good. They bring in Carson Steele from Ball State, who's just like built like I don't know if you ever watched Strong Bad. Like, remember Strong Bad? He's like just a giant brick.
Yeah.
He looks like a giant square.
Right.
And that's Carson Steele, who's backed by TJ Harden, who averaged 7 yards per carry and was kind of overshadowed by Zach Charbonnet. And then they've been recruiting pretty well at the running back. Like, they're going to be able to move the ball on the ground, and they're going to have a quarterback that has a pretty high floor.
Right.
And then when you take a look at some of the other positions here, and we'll go through them, like, that's why I'm really kind of bullish on what they're able to do, because I just believe in Chip Kelly after doubting him for so many years, for so many, like, at UCLA, obviously. I doubted him at Oregon.
Right.
Like,
right.
This guy's a freaking madman at Oregon.
Maybe with the Niners a bit, but.
Yes, that's true. He comes back and I'm like, what on earth are you doing? This is a total mess. And in some ways it is, but at the end of the day, you look at this team this year,
right?
And now he's cooking and now he has something to be able to show you.
Yeah, and look, they've got the Oregon transfer at tight end. I mean, that's going to continue to be their bread and butter, right? Is like, and I mean, they've taken former walk-ons, you know, and turn them into very productive college tight ends,
like NFL drafted players. Yeah.
I think this still feels a little bit like the old Chip Kelly Oregon offenses, where it's like, if you want to be a good wide receiver, you better be able to block, you know, like where they're, you know, like that. And I'm not saying I think they've gotten a little bit better there. Right. But they're definitely like the bread and butter has been, they've been a little bit like Utah was last year, which was a very strong running game and some tight end passing. I think that they're going to diversify a little bit, particularly. I mean, like Moore can spin it. I mean, like the word on Moore was like, he's got a cannon for an arm. He makes it look really easy. You know, like if he ends up being your starter, I mean, you never know. I mean, we say that, like, you never know. Like, who was it? The Chip, like, didn't he make DTR wait behind like some dumb Michigan transfer? Who was that guy?
Oh God. Yeah. Who was that? Like, oh my God.
The guy that, I mean, that dude was like made entirely out of rectangles. Like, he was the most awkward. It was like a transformer was playing quarterback. Anyway, like, anyway, like, it would be very, very Chip Kelly to be like, nope, Garbers is our guy, or like maybe like bring Colson Yankoff back from the dead or wherever they hit him on the roster, right? Like the other Washington QB transfer. But like, I mean, the schedule there, like, it does, I think when you look at like breaking in a young quarterback, like,
I'm sorry, I just looked him up. Wilton Spate. Yes. Right?
His name is awkward too. None of that. Watching him run, people are going to look back at, like, we're going to be the only people during that remember these days at the Pac-12 20 years from now. But like, they need to get somebody in and get them comfortable by the time you get to Utah, which is September 23rd, right? Like, because after that, the schedule's pretty manageable till you get to USC. Like, there's one maybe tough game on there, say Oregon State, you know?
I would push back a little bit on Moore with the arm. I think the thing that jumps out with him is his decision-making.
Okay.
Like, he's just, and like David Woods from he covers the Bruins and does the podcast Champions. He talks a lot about in spring ball, how he just makes really sharp decisions that are well beyond like his years, and he's able to put the ball and just get it out in a way that's, but even he was saying that Garbers right now is likely the guy. I mean,
okay,
now we're going into fall camp and, like, you know, now we're starting to fight, but that is a legit fight. And then you have Schley as probably just, you know, God bless him, getting that econ master's at UCLA. And God bless you. Like, just do it, man. Get them degrees, man.
Right.
That's going to get you some money. The thing for me with the tight end and what this offense could be is that they brought in two wide receivers that are just very abnormal for what we've seen at UCLA for a number of years. They brought in the Cal transfer, J. Michael Sternovit, who is by far the best transfer at Cal. He was really talented. He even came with significant pedigree. And as he signed there, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, again,
right.
Cal, great school, get that degree. But like, if you're going to be a football player, that's under what that offensive system was, probably not the best decision. He transfers. Kyle Ford
is supposed
to be really good. And he's a bigger guy. So when you talk about blocking and you talk about almost that, like that Y type of wide receiver, like the bigger guy, that's him, but he's the guy, like he's going to be good. And you add him to like Cam Brown, who came in from Texas A&M. They have a couple really fast guys in the slot. I think I'm curious, and I don't know if they're going to do this, but there's a possibility where they open that offense a little bit more with the wide receivers than they have with the tight end. So just like kind of keep a lookout for that. Yeah. It might not happen. Kelly might just stick to his gun because the Oregon transfer, Mataveo, is pretty good.
Right. But,
And he's made, you know, like you mentioned, he's taken redshirt freshmen and two-star tight ends, and he's done his wizardry with them. But anyway, I just like wanted to flag that because it's a possibility that you have another dimension now to this offense in addition to what we've seen already.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be interesting to see, because I do think that even if the wide receivers haven't been great in the past, the running game has been so good. They really should have still been able to key off of it a bit, right? And like, DTR's got an arm, you know, like I don't think it's pure scheme. So maybe they do need to, you know, like test it out. Ford was a highly, highly recruited guy when he went to USC. And it didn't work out at all for him.
I mean, was behind, though. He was behind so many like players that have ended up being pretty darn good there. I think
that's true. They had Addison.
He should have been one of them, though.
I mean, Addison was off to the NFL, and he wasn't sticking around this year, right? Like, I mean, they had some turnover. They brought in, the guy from Arizona. I think Ford and Sturdivant are definitely better, you know, than they've had. But, like, I mean, they had like Chase Cota was a four-star, right? Like, wide receiver, oddly enough, right? They got. I think the offense is going to be fine. I think it will be interesting to see if they are able to open up a bit more. Garbers are less like DTR. You know, they are more like a little bit like they have some athleticism, but they're going to look to throw the ball first and foremost. Right.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing for UCLA is just whoever can play within the system is going to play. Right. And like, I mean, I will give Kelly credit. Like, I mean, even when DTR was bad, like a couple turnovers a game bad sometimes, like he stuck with them. Right. And he didn't pull them.
I would argue he stuck with them during the season. The offseason was looking around over his shoulder trying to see what he always could bring. But I hear you.
Oh, that's true. But I do think that Kelly, like for the schedule, right? Like, and I'm not saying that they're going to go like blow the doors off of Utah or anything if they don't turn the ball over. But like, that's the main thing, I think, for them, right? Is like, just if you can cut down on your turnovers, you can get through the majority of the schedule. Fine. Particularly, I mean, like as we're saying, is like we think the defense will improve. Like you could get through the majority of this schedule just fine, and you're going to be the favorite in a whole bunch of these games, right? Now you're not going to be like a prohibitive favorite in all of them, but you'd be a decent. They're going to be a decent favorite in most of their games. Call that Oregon State game a toss up, right? Like there's only two games on the schedule that you're probably an underdog, and that's USC and Utah. That's a pretty fair. I mean, like, again, like you might just need somebody to manage the game to get ahead here.
Yeah. I mean, like the worry is offensive line on paper.
Yeah.
But, and look, like, I think that with this offensive line has been such a, like duct tape and chicken wire type of construction since Kelly's been here.
Right.
and you're not going to get the best line in the conference, but I don't think he needs that. Like, I think he just needs to be able to have a competent line that allows the run game to set up the pass. And this year is interesting because he brings in three transfers, and that, I mean, almost any other team, I'm like, this is stupid. This is going to be dumb.
I feel like Kelly does well in the transfer portal at offensive line, though.
We're bringing in guards from Colorado. That worries me a little bit. Like, right?
Right.
Like, Jake Wiley is penciled in as the starting guard, as the starting right guard. They do have two returners, their center and their tackle. The right tackle comes back. You know, we're looking at an Old Dominion tackle probably for left on the left side. We're looking at a Purdue starter. Like, I just, but like, I say that more just to, if I don't mention it, I'm not doing due diligence for UCLA. I think it's going to be okay. I mean, it's not going to be terror. It's not going to be great, but it's going to be okay.
I mean, I don't think, I mean, they may not be quite as effective as they were last year running the football, but I still think they're going to be really effective running the darn football, right? Like, and they sat it. I mean, they were really good. I mean, like, according to Football Outsiders calculation for line yards, they were at number two overall. I mean, they got a really good push last year. So yeah, maybe there's going to be a bit of fall off, but I don't think it's going to be the end of the world. Right. You know, like, we still expect them to be quite good, have a really good running game. Maybe the offense falls to like 12, you know, in the 15 range. I think Kelly's pretty creative, and he does run good stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's shift over to the defense, because that's like, if they're going to win the conference, if they're going to compete for the conference, if they're going to go over, this is where, like, I'm confident in the offense. I think the offense is going to keep scoring and they'll be fine. The defense has been a problem and it might still be. What was this defense last year?
So last season, this defense was 80 overall in beta rank. That is a very, very bad Power 5 defense for sure. They were at 113 in drive efficiency. You could really put together drives against them. And as good as the offense was, I mean, that tells you that, you know, the teams were able to put together long drives, because like, you were often starting from a kickoff, right? Like, you didn't have, like, the defense had really good field position to work with, and they still gave up a bunch of points. 39 overall in explosive drives. They gave up a lot of big plays. 50 in play efficiency, 85 in negative drives, not enough three and outs, not enough turnovers. What really hurt, I mean, this is still bad. Like, they're in effective rush, they were at 62 overall, but 91 in effective pass. They really, really struggled. And I had to, I mean, man, I swear, we had to listen to, remember when they brought that guy over from Navy?
Oh yeah.
And he was going to clean up the back end, right? Like, they struggled against the pass last year. But the new defensive coordinator is, I mean, when I saw who the new DC was, I was pretty excited. I mean, I'm pretty excited about this. Like, I think Lynn is a really good hire for them. And is going to help clean up some of what they've been doing.
I think there's a couple things that make me optimistic, and then there's some things that make me pessimistic. I think the line is okay, right? You have the Murphy twins at the end.
Yeah.
You have Leatu Leitu, who was just a revelation for them, and he was one of those transfer portal guys that got injured at like Hawaii and then kind of gave up on football, and then UCLA gave him a chance, and he was awesome. He returns. So I think the edges are going to be pretty good. Carl Jones comes back and all this stuff. In the middle, Jay Toya is actually pretty good. He was that like five-star-ish transfer from USC that ended up going over to UCLA. He returns. They have Gary Smith, and they got a guy named Keanu Williams, who's an Oregon transfer. Like, that line, if you line that, if that was the defensive line for Oregon State or for Washington State or for, like, and look, like, we're not saying USC, Oregon, Washington, right?
But yeah.
It's not bad. Like, I think that line is going to be okay. And then when you take a look at the linebackers, right, they're going to probably do like that 4-2-5, which is kind of where everybody's going. Like, I had them down as a 4-3, and then it's kind of like, oh, not really.
Yeah.
They bring in Cal starting inside linebacker. They have an Alabama transfer who was injured last year, who was a 4-star guy. And then behind them, you have the starters from last year. You have Vons, who wasn't that good. You have Darius Mwasu from Hawaii, who was kind of a mess, but you have like, it seems like Kelly went out and he kind of beefed up that linebacking core, knowing that that was a weakness. And I just, I don't know. What do you think about that front seven?
I mean, I think the
front six.
Yeah, I think the I think the front six has a shot to be better. You know, I mean, I think to your point, like the concern is a little bit more up the middle. You know, and whether they, I mean, look, I mean, 60 isn't great defending the run. They still have a lot of work to do there too. But I definitely think they have a shot to like cut down on, you know, like if Toya in particular can show more progress, I think they have a shot to close down some of the interior run. I mean, and two, and like we talked about this as like, you know, that they can generate a decent amount of pressure, but like, you're not getting a 90 an effective pass by like getting a ton of pressure on the quarterback at effective times, right? Like,
yeah.
So they're going to have to step it up there too. But I mean, in some way, like, you know, you'd be, I think, look, there's not like, they didn't recruit a bunch of these guys. Like Kelly has probably spent more, like Chip Kelly is probably more jazzed about the transfer portal than any human. Like, yeah. I mean, he's like, oh, I don't have to go out and recruit. Yeah. Great. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is probably like, this might bite him at some point. Right. I just don't think it's this year. Right. Like, I just think this seems pretty good, actually.
But I do think, I mean, I do think that there are like, if you go through it, it does feel a little bit like the, like, I mean, it can feel a little bit like the Island of Misfit Toys. I do think that there's better coaching and that's going to help a lot. I think, that transfer for Alabama who they really, I mean, it was like when he got injured, that was a major loss for them. Because I think people were so excited about him coming in, even though he didn't quite work out at Bama. And he, so I think they're excited to have him this year. They could definitely use more speed, more getting the football in that front six, front seven. I mean, like, it is tough because like, I am excited. I think a new defensive coordinator is really big. However, you go through it, you're just like, oh man, are all these pieces going to fit? Like,
I think they'll fit better. Yeah. I mean, like they were in a top 80 defense last year. Like I think that if new coordinator, arguably better pieces,
right,
or like close enough pieces, and that's, I mean, like top 60. Like, look, it doesn't. I'm not saying
the top 40. That's the biggest deal. But like, I mean, you want to go into the, I mean, the weakness. The weakness is, I mean,
yeah, well, the weakness was starting to ZZ Hearn last year. Like that was the weakness. Good Lord.
When people, oh my God, when people were like, oh man, they've got this corner from Wyoming and it's a ZZ Hearn. I was like, oh, that is ZZ Hearn. There can't be two of them, right? Like the guy who was a walk-on in Arizona. And as soon as he came on the field, Houston was like, it's time for deep balls. Cause that guy didn't have the legs.
Spoiler alert, yeah. Still didn't have the legs. Like the, so if you want to look at the bright side, it's the starting four. Likely Devin Kirkwood, high four-star player, John Humphrey, these are your two likely starting corners. John Humphrey, like pretty decent recruit, seems like they like him in camp. They bring in an Oregon transfer who's likely the backup at corner. And then they got some guys that didn't play. At nickel, they have a former walk. Now is where things start really sliding off cliff.
Yeah.
Like they have a walk-on who's probably not good named Alex Johnson that is slated in that nickel spot. And when you take a look at what this team was last year, where ZZ Hearn was your starter, that speaks volumes of what your depth looks like. So they have a true freshman title. I mean, this is where the wagon gets a little rickety and you're nailing things a bit. Like, and when you do this in the Pac-12, I think you get into danger. So, I think the safety will be interesting. Mo Ossling, who is probably their best player in the secondary, is gone.
Right.
And that's a problem. They bring in Jordan Anderson from like a Bowling Green transfer. And like,
where you want to be getting your defensive players, right? Like,
I was trying to do a serious face and then it just kind of melted away. The secondary is kind of a mess.
Well, that's, look, it's not going to maybe hurt him as much. Like, you don't have Oregon and Washington on the schedule. That's like, you know, and as you go through the schedule, right? Like, yeah, you got Utah, but Utah, you're going to need to be able to, you know, knuckle down and stop the run. Right. Washington State's going to throw it around a bit, but they're not
Not well. I mean,
we'll see with new OC helps, but yeah, I'm a little like I'm not gonna be like, oh, they're gonna throw the ball all over the place. I was there last year. It wasn't like that. It's Arizona, because Arizona threw it around on them last year, and Arizona's gonna throw it around again this year, right? Maybe ASU by the time you get to there with Dillingham. And then USC.
Trent Burke is their quarterback. Like, is I'm he? Sorry. Like,
it's not Drew yes, Pine or the Rashada kid.
Apparently Drew Pine sucks. Okay. Yeah. Like, I mean, but I gotta read the fall.
Newsflash, like, guy that couldn't start like, no at Notre Dame who has like zero good quarterbacks. Like,
and then like, I mean, if we're going to say Drew Pine is the quarterback, I'd still be like,
no, you want Rashada in there. Rashada's that guy that like his NIL deal fell through at Florida and ended up at ASU, right? Like that's what they want.
Florida overpaid for that. That was the thing. It's like it was a bunch of guys at Florida that were like, yeah, let's pay this guy a lot of money without the
sign-off. And then Napier was like, no.
Yeah. It was kind of a mess. Oh, whole man. Thing. Well, like, okay, so, okay, well, let me.
So then it's you to you. But like, I guess what I'm saying is like, if you go through the schedule this year, like, some of their tougher games, it's Utah, you're going to need to stop the run more than the pass, although Utah can get it out to the tight ends, you know, as needed. Oregon State, we talked about this. Like, what do we expect them to do? Run the football. DJU might open that offense up a bit. We do expect that. But still, like, you know, the key to beating the Beavs is stopping the run. I mean, it's really Arizona and USC that is gonna crack them open, right? Like, in the same way that, like, I mean, like, you know, they did beat Washington last year, which also had a horrendous defense. But like, you're not facing, you know, like rolling Oregon and Washington off is crucial for this defense, because like, I don't think these guys are good on the back end. That's my nope. concern is like, they are not good on the back end. But you've got like Stanford and Colorado and Cal, you know, they've got San Diego State and Coastal, who likes to run the football in the non-conference. Right. So it's like, you know, like
without Jamie Chadwell,
right.
Like
now Grayson McCall, who will be, he's like the, that's true. Like the Ronnie Turioff of college football. He's been around forever. I made that joke about Ronnie Turioff and he searched his name on Twitter and found it. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, oh my God, don't make me explain the joke.
It's Ronnie, you're an NBA player. Why
are you? Yeah. Like you just spent a lot of time in Spokane, man. I get it. I don't get it. Actually, I've been to Spokane. But like, I guess I just think like, for what their weaknesses really are, right? Like they don't have to face two of the really, really good the offenses that we think are going to be really good in the Pac-12. And that's a huge thing for them, right? Because like, I think offensively, I'm not going to say UCLA can play with anybody, but they're not going to, like, they're at most, they're going to be a step behind USC on offense, right? Like, I don't think that they're going to be so far behind, right? And I think that makes this like, as we talked about, like a really, really interesting team, not just like the pieces that we think are going to work, but I think the schedule, not only does it help that Oregon and Washington are rolling off, but that sets them up on the rest of it too. Like, for not having to face really tough teams, but teams that would exploit UCLA's particular weakness.
Yeah. Yeah. One more thing to mention. They have recruited okay at the safety spot. So they have a couple of true like redshirt freshmen that could break their way in, which would be good for them. So all right, let's talk USC, because obviously they're the team everyone wants to talk about. But like, I don't think they're going to win the conference. I'm just whispering. Let's get to USC right after this. All right, we're back. We're talking USC. USC is that problematic member in your friend base, your family, that just makes terrible decisions all the time, and it affects everybody, right? It's like, oh, I can't go out because this happened, or we can't go on vacation because this happened. And then they're like very wealthy president of like a major corporation hires him as their vice president with like out any credentials. Like, that's USC, because USC has just made all the bad mistakes all of the time. they get Lincoln Riley and then they bolt the conference. So it was like literally 10 years of just mediocrity.
Right.
But this offense is it is beautiful. It is a beautiful offense. And I'm so sad that like it's not in the Pac-12 for more than a couple of years. Cause I mean, like we kind of mentioned this with UCLA where, hey, all right, like, all right, I know the offensive line kind of sucks but it's going to be fine. I kind of think that's the case with Lincoln Riley's offenses where he already has all the skill pieces and the weakness is the offensive line, whatever. Like this offense is going to hum and it's going to be awesome. But like, what was it last year?
I mean, so they were really good. They were number 4 overall in beta rank. Now they were only at 1.58 and both Georgia and Tennessee got above 2 last year. So even though they were number 4 overall, there is a gap between them and the top 2 offenses. Number 13 overall in drive efficiency. This is something they could absolutely improve on. They need to get better at sustaining long drives to be able to put up points. Number 4 in explosive drives, really good here. Not much of a fall off from the most explosive offense in college football. Number 15 in play efficiency, did a decent job in their yards per play outside of explosives. 4 in negative drives, not a lot of 3 and outs, not a lot of turnovers. They're at 40 in effective rush, number 4 in effective pass. That's something I would sort of keep an eye on because I do think, I mean, Riley does like to run the football and he's got an innovative run scheme of his own. And of course, like it feels like freaking cheating that like Cliff Kingsbury is their quarterback coach. Like,
I forgot that. I like saw that again. I'm like, oh my God.
Right. Like,
and good for them. Good for them. Right. But,
like, but I mean, to your point, like the offensive line last year, wasn't good. I mean, it was real. I mean, like Caleb Williams literally ran for his life. Sometimes and at times it really felt like the Caleb Williams show. Yeah, I mean, like he won the Heisman for a reason. Oh, it was the yeah. Caleb Williams show. But he had some really talented skill position players, but the offensive line really struggled. I would say we talked about, like, I think they made a good offensive line coach hire. I just don't think they had the bodies last year. I'm not sure they have the bodies yet this year either, I think is the trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start at the top. Like, I mean, but like the, like, yeah, like I mean, quarterback, if Williams goes down, there's a problem, but if he's healthy, like, I mean, as we saw that with Utah, that Pac-12 championship game was over when he got injured, right? Like if he could not outrun the pass rush, the game was over.
I do think that speaks to the line.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's the line. Yeah. They couldn't keep him upright.
He won them the, like, if you look at the final score of that ASU game, you'll be like, oh, well, they beat ASU pretty handily. They did not. Caleb Williams won that game for them.
Yeah.
If Miller Moss was the quarterback, they lose that game. There's a couple other games too where he came in and he was just a freaking wizard. It is a privilege to watch him play football. Yeah. And like, there are multiple plays where my jaw is on the floor. But that is him, and that is not Lincoln Riley. That is just something to keep in mind.
Yeah,
but he's the quarterback. Like, that's the thing. Is like, he's,
I mean, like Riley. That. Riley is a tremendous offensive innovator and a tremendous offensive mind. But I do think that, like, I mean, Riley also, I mean, he famously got pissed that his, you know, he had a falling out with his offensive line coach at Oklahoma because, like, that Oklahoma offensive line, Caleb Williams' first year, his freshman year at Oklahoma, wasn't very good. And Riley was pissed about the development there. And so they ended up hiring the A&M coach out here. I just don't think, like, I don't think they have the bodies for it. That's the worry. But, like, I mean, they've got behind Miller Moss, like, if Caleb Williams were to get injured, maybe it's Miller Moss. It might be Malachi Nelson. Like, I mean, that guy, he and, you know, he's been following in the same way that Caleb Williams is like, where you go, I shall go also. but, I mean, he was committed to Oklahoma. Now he's committed and showed up to USC. You know, and he's a 5-star guy, super talented. It might be, and also has, I think, more athleticism than Miller Moss. You might need somebody that can get around that. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily.
I think that's true.
I mean, it worked for Caleb Williams as a freshman, but. Mm-hmm.
No, totally, totally agree. Actually, like now that I'm thinking about that, I put Miller Moss in just because he had the time. We're looking at the. I mean, for those that are on audio, like we're looking at the depth chart, and that is probably likely the case. I think Miller Moss is who he is, and you see Malachi Nelson. But I do think this kind of like, you know, I guess I might be going back on what I had said when I opened with UCLA, where you take a look at this quarterback room, and like obviously Williams goes down and it's a problem.
Yeah,
but
it's
like
a big problem.
Miller Moss has he has been in games, he has the experience, and Malachi Nelson is like a massive star and has a year under his belt. So it's kind of like, you know, I think there is maybe more depth there than I gave them credit for. On the running side, like Austin Jones returns.
Yeah.
They do lose Torrey Dye, who is quite good for them. They bring in Marshawn Lloyd, who Bud Elliott, who covers a lot of like the transfer portal and like recruiting and stuff, thinks he's really good. He's a good bruiser.
Yeah.
So he's a good second pick from there. Relique Brown returns, a high star, like, you know, true freshman who played last year. I mean, they're going to be fine at the run game. Like, I mean, that's just, they're stacked. And it's like, there's not going to be a difference. I mean, there'll be a difference, but like, it's just, you look and I'm just looking on, and it's four-star, five-star, five-star, good transfer. Like it's endless.
Yeah. And they're loaded at wide receiver. Like, load. I mean, like, I'm not sure they're going to have enough reps. Like, it's one thing that's been like they've been talking about everyone around the USC camp is like, what are we going to do with all these guys?
So I'm going to push back a little bit. Here's the negative part about this. And you're right. I'm just going to play a little bit of devil's advocate because I think that yes, they have recruited extremely well. Dorian Singer comes in for Arizona. Torched you at USC. It was a bad defense, but he was a really good.
Dorian Singer is really good. I think everyone realized last year how good Dorian Singer was.
Yeah, totally agree. Zach Branch, five-star. Like, people are talking about how he is one of the fastest wide receiver. Like, again, at all of the opening and all this stuff, like everybody went, holy smokes, this guy's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to grant you those two. Brendan Rice totally disappeared in games. Taj Washington, a three-star transfer from Memphis.
All right. Yeah.
Mario Williams, he could be really good because he was buried behind the depth chart, but like he didn't emerge last year. Michael Jackson Jr.
And we are also talking about like they had Jordan Addison last season too, right? I mean, like
That's true. But like Mario Williams was one of those players where I think everybody went like, oh snap, like teammate from Oklahoma comes over, he's going to fill in that slot right away. He's going to be a factor. He was fine.
Yeah.
And they've recruited really well. Like, I mean, they have 4 stars and 5 stars right all across the board. But it's more like I look at what this wide receiving core is compared to some of the other cores in the Pac-12. I think this is like top three, which is fine because Williams is awesome. But
Washington's got a really good wide receiver room too, right? I would put Washington number one. I still think what we have is we have a bunch of people that, I mean, we have a couple of people that we think are like with say Singer that we're really sure about. Mario Williams could maybe end up back on the map again this season. But they've got a bunch of guys that if it's not working, somebody else that was a highly recruited wide receiver is going to get on the field very quickly.
Yeah. They got this guy, Deuce Robinson, 5-star freshman tight end who might play the Y. He could play tight end. Like they do have talent. It's more just that the proven talent here
is thin.
It's not what you've seen elsewhere, but like the actual talent is there. So I'm sorry. I'm nitpicking, right? Like this. And I think sometimes we focus, Rob, more on the negative parts of these teams. Like this offense is going to be like top 10, no questions asked. But
I mean, Dorian Singer himself, like, I mean, seriously, like Dorian, if you did not watch a lot of Arizona last season, Dorian Singer was really, really good. You know, like, I mean, and having him with Caleb Williams instead of Delora throwing to him would not make me happy as a Pac-12 defensive coordinator, right? Like he's a great route runner. He's got wheels, you know, he's dangerous once he's got the ball in his hands too. Like Singer, I think is going to be electric in this offense. But I do think that you're right. Like after Singer, like the actual production gets a little thin. But it does feel like I'm pretty confident that these guys are going to largely figure it out.
Yeah, keep a lookout for Zach Branch. Like, I'm after, you know, I've done a little bit of reading on him. Like, I'm really excited to see what he's in this offense, because like, he's that open space. Holy smokes, nobody can catch him and he's gone.
Yeah,
those are so fun. Like, and he's like 5'9", yeah. You know, like, just I love those players. Well, so
I mean, you used to not like, you want to, if Riley's and Riley's offense last season didn't have a tight end that was like a major weapon or anything like that, right? But like, Riley doesn't like Riley does run the air raid ish what, you know, modern air raid is, but like, what he's got, when it's working well, he's got a tight end in there, and he's, you know, because he can go out and recruit, unlike Mike Leach, where he's like, I can't recruit a tight end that can play. Like, Riley can, so he'll have a tight end in there. If he's got somebody in there that can play this year, and you've got Branch in there, but like, those Oklahoma slot receivers were sometimes the most dangerous guys in that offense for as often as they got the ball. And that's where I think, like, if you put somebody in there like that, plus with Singer's route running abilities, like, I think you're cooking. I mean, like, my biggest question for them is not at receiver. Like, I think they're going to be great. Like, they're whoever it is, like, you got Caleb Williams throwing you the football, you'll be fine, man. Like, it's at the offensive line, and can they run the ball? I think and people are going to say, like, Riley does run the area, but he likes to run the football. His offense reminds me of the old Joe Tiller offense, which was, you know, put three wide receivers on the field, spread them out to throw the football, but you combine that with a power run game. And that's what Riley would love to be doing.
Yeah. And you take a look at this line, and I'm going to treat it with the same kid's gloves that I did with UCLA, because I think it's going to be, like, on paper, it's kind of a mess, right? Because they lose a couple starters, a couple of them went to the NFL, and they're doing the same thing UCLA did. They're going to plug these holes with transfers. Left tackle, you're going to have a transfer from Florida. Left guard, you're going to have a transfer from Wyoming, who, like, you know, the recruiting services say are a five-star transfer, which I tend to treat with more of a, I tend to treat that a little bit more legitimate, like, with legitimacy with the transfers. But anytime it's a power five, like that, or a group of five, I get a little hesitant. And you can just take a look at the transfer from Hawaii that came to UCLA at linebacker last year, all Mountain West, and he was kind of a mess. They bring in Jared Kingston from Washington State, who was fine.
Right.
He was a tackle. They're going to move him to guard. They bring back Justin Dedich and Jonah Moynihan. I'm just going to have to give Riley the benefit of the doubt that this is going to be fine. Again, it's not going to be great, like you said, but it's going to be good enough for them to be able to just have an awesome defense or awesome offense.
I mean, I feel like, honestly, like, you know what this line feels like? It feels like Arizona's from last year. Now, much more talented than not as quite as, but it, like, what I mean though is, like, the depth just isn't there yet still. Right. And they're still desperately plugging holes. Right. Like, I mean, I think, like, when we get to Arizona, like, we'll be like, oh, like, this is the first year, like, there's some young guys, but like, this is the first time, like, where there's dudes and then there's like another guy that they actually recruited behind them. Like,
exactly.
That is a year away, at least, I think, for USC. You know, and like, look, like, I mean, like, a lot of programs can't go out like UCLA can or USC can, and like, actually get offensive linemen in the transfer portal. That's actually hard to do. USC can go out and get some decent guys, but like, it's not great. Wyoming's offense was horrifying last year, and around Pregnon, like, the most everybody was like really young and really bad. He was supposedly the one positive on that line.
It's like, hey, y'all.
Right. And you do, I mean, look, like, moving, I mean, you know, Kingston may not have been athletic enough to be at tackle, and, you know, that will get you moved into guard, and that might be a good fit. You know, like, you might end up with a guy that was actually like a little more athletic than you might have gotten at a guard there. But it is, I mean, like, you know, the Florida transfer in there starting at left tackle, potentially that, I mean, that worries me. I do like, again, like, I like the offensive line coach hire that they made getting him from A&M. I think that's going to pay dividends down the road. I just think this year might still be a little bit of a patchwork. I think they could be better than they were last year. That's a really low bar though. But they need, I mean, truly, like, to get the cap off of this offense to potentially push for it. Because, like, USC, if they want to be serious, like, their schedule's not like UCLA. They get Oregon and Washington this season, right? In the regular season. There's no miss for them. Like, they're going to play everybody that's a Pac-12 contender, except for Oregon State rolls off their schedule. This offensive line's got to be this offensive line has to be really good for them to be able to get through this schedule without taking some L's.
Well, here would be the pushback on that. They had a bad offensive line last year and they still were able to put up like 40. Like this was a 40 plus point offense per game, regardless of the line, because Williams was so good.
Yeah.
That's probably the case this year too, right?
I think like they're going to run into, like, last season you didn't have Washington on the schedule. And so, like, yeah, like you can go out and put up a bunch of big numbers in a game, but the other offense can't keep up with you. Right. Like, and I think, like, for that, like, there's still, like I talked about, like, there's headroom. Like 1.58 isn't even anywhere near Riley's best offense he's had as a head coach and an offensive coordinator. Right. Like, he's got to get up back up near that 2 range, I think, for them, because I still think the defense is, like, not, like, it's like you see, it's like we talked about with UCLA, is like best case scenario is like very average Power 5 defense, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I think the thing with them was, like, UCLA almost beat them. They didn't play, like, to your point, they didn't play Oregon, they didn't play Washington. I was praying, like, I lit 6 candles. I actually didn't do this, but, like, like, this would be sacrilegious. But in my mind, I'm like lighting candles, hoping that USC would make the college football playoff so I could bet the hell against them, because they had no defense and, like, could, like, this offense was fine, but play a real defense and then get back to
if
me.
They would have, if they would have drawn, like, Georgia, that's what they would have gotten in. They would have gotten in and got Georgia.
Oh, they got smoked. Like, just this would have been
obliterated.
Oregon level preseason,
right?
Level of destruction.
Just, that would have been, that, and it wouldn't even, like, I mean, Georgia had a very good defense last year. Georgia's offense was excellent last season. Like, yeah, they would have put up, like, it would have been like that TCU game. They would have put up 70.
Oh my gosh, it would have been awesome. I mean, like, just fun to watch, because, like, there is a little bit of swagger here with USC and the Pac-12, like, moving to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Like,
all
right, like, here's where you're going. All right. Speaking of bad defenses, let's talk about USC's defense here. This was a mess.
Yeah.
What did we have last year?
They were 90 overall. They were 93 in drive efficiency. You could put together long drives on them. They were 98 in explosive drives. You could put up big plays on them. 113 in play efficiency. They gave up way too much in regards for play outside of explosives. The one thing they did well, and if you recall the early season USC turnover machine, they did 75 right. and negative drives. They did generate some turnovers. They did generate some three and outs. 95 in effective rush, 87 in effective pass. I mean, that's horrible. I mean, and we should also mention here too, because we talked about it a little bit with UCLA. Their special teams weren't very good last season, 65 overall. That also has to get better. But the defense is the main thing. I mean, they were horrible last season.
The thing here was, and it's the frustrating part, because, like, we bashed the UCLA defense. There's no excuse here. Like, UCLA, the excuse is Chip Kelly's too lazy to recruit, right? These are all 3-star guys and, like, transfers from group of 5 teams. Like, literally, this is all 5 and 4-star players. And, like, look, there has been a couple areas where Clay Helton wasn't able to build up a defense. But, like, for the most part,
right,
these guys are supposed to be good, and they were not. And, look, I loved those Washington State defenses as much as you did, Rob, with, like, Buchanan and who's the guy
Hercules,
in the middle that was like
Hercules.
Hercules Mata, yeah. That guy was freaking baller. But I mean, how many years are we removed from that where Alex Grinch has done anything productive?
I mean, like, it's the only year that his, and I always tell people, like, the only numbers that I take without a grain of salt from 2020 are the Alabama offensive numbers. That's it. everything else is like, meh, finger in the wind. Like, Oklahoma had a good defense in 2020, but it was 2020. I don't know how much that holds up. So you get over to the last year at Oklahoma, they weren't good. You know, the first year at USC, they weren't good. And I'm not sold on, I mean, this has to be it for Grinch. Like they have to turn it around. But I mean, and you put together this depth chart, I'm going back through it again, and it's like, oh my God. Like, I mean, they're like a year. Look, I mean, in some ways it's so funny because like I'm about to do it again, because it's like I don't understand why Lincoln Riley and Jed Fish have like the same game plan. Like it's just, you're like, it's like, oh, it's year two. We still need all the transfers. We did it again last year and it didn't quite work, and a bunch of them didn't work. And what are we gonna do? We're gonna get all the transfers again. Like you go through the front seven and you're just like, yep. Oh wow, oh yeah, none of these guys are started at USC, and none of them were great at their last stop.
The front six.
Yeah.
The front six, all six transfers, and two backups are transfers. So like six, so like eight of your 12 guys are all transfers from different programs. Now that doesn't mean they're not good or they can't be good, but it is wild because you take a look, and again, was Clay Helton the best recruiter at USC? No. Was Clay Helton the dumbest hire that USC has made in a long time? Yes. Was Clay Helton's extension the single stupidest extension of any coach besides maybe Wayne Tinkle in the conference in the last 30 years that I've been alive?
Yes. After Tinkle's kid was gone, giving him an extension?
Yeah, I know. Come on. They have one more coming through the pipeline. Let's, you know, get that nepotism going. I mean, it's wild. And like, but you take a look at the front seven, like right at tackle, you have Keon Bars, who was decent at Arizona. You got Jack Sullivan, who's decent at Purdue. And then you have Barry Alexander, who's here's where things get really worrisome. This is why I don't think USC is winning the conference. They have a more difficult schedule. And then you have this crap where it's like they bring in Barry Alexander from Georgia. He's supposed to be the big guy for this defense, where he's going to fill the middle. He's a borderline five-star guy. And then I'm reading articles about him really feeling out the culture still and getting settled in. Like, you're a five-star defensive tackle. Your job is to be awesome immediately, and you are not. And Keon Bars is probably starting in front of you, and that's a problem.
I mean, look, like when USC went and did their little shopping spree at Arizona, like the names that made sense to me, I was like, oh yeah, Dorian Singer. All right. Like, you know, I get it. You move on, get paid, young man. Like he ended up, like he had a scholarship that fell out when like the Texas staff got turned over, and like he ended up at Arizona as a walk-on. Like it was like, yeah, I get it, man. Go get it. You know, Christian Roland Wallace, I also get, cause that guy's actually pretty talented, and he had a USC offer out of high school. And I, you know, like, I think it could, that also fell through for him, and he ended up at Arizona. I get those ones. Bars was the one where I was like, I mean, okay. Like there are moments where I'm like, yeah, he's okay. there's a lot of moments like everyone else on Arizona's front seven where I'm like, oh, that's bad. Right. Like, and the fact that Arizona, like they grabbed that, he went along to USC, I thought was like, like we talk about this, like, it's easier to go shopping at the skill position in the transfer portal. It's hard. And the fact that, like, I guess what's worrisome here is, here you are in year two and you've got an entire transfer defensive line starting, when it's very hard for anyone to go out and get players in the transfer portal at defensive line. That is a tell.
You have Corey Foreman.
Yeah.
Who is a five-star number one recruit who, like, look, I listen to Alicia Deratola, who I trust like intrinsically on anything when it comes to spring camp. And they were talking about him like as if he didn't exist.
That's bonkers.
I totally forgot Romello Height was a transfer from Auburn that didn't play. Their starting defensive end is a transfer from Texas A&M that did not play. I think you're going to be able to run on this team. Right. Like, and okay, Shane Lee, transfer from Alabama, not that good. Like he was not that good last year. They get in Mason Cobb from Oklahoma State, who was like a legit good linebacker. I think he's going to be the one. I think you're going to be able to run the ball on this team again. And that is not a secret for the last couple of years, Rob. Like, I mean, we've covered this at nauseam. Anytime USC plays a team that can run the ball, I bet on the team that can run the ball. Because guess what? They'll be able to run the ball.
Right. No, I mean, I don't like, I mean, look, I mean, I think they, and I don't, it's not just that. I don't think that they're going to generate a ton of pass rush without blitzing. Right. Like, I think you go down through these guys, like, and I think that like quarterbacks are going to have time against them. I mean, it's just like, it's, I guess what's sort of crazy here is that you look at, and they have guys, I mean, you go look through the depth chart and there's all the dudes that transferred in last year that didn't work out and are now just like filling roster spots on the team, right? Like Solomon Bird from Wyoming, you know, in there, like, and then you've got a handful of guys that they actually recruited who they don't seem to have made any real progress with. In there, and the fact that they are really just back in here, it's just, I mean, really to be at a spot to be at, like, I get it. You could talk me into oh yeah, like Christian Roland Wallace is going to be their nickel. I'd be like, oh, I get it. I think he was actually a pretty talented guy for Arizona on what was largely a really bad unit. But if you told me like Kion Bars is coming in and starting at defensive tackle,
yeah,
I'm going to tell you that you're probably going to be able to get some yards up the middle.
Yeah.
Right. Like he's got some moments, but I don't think he is a, on a good defense, like a good mid-level power five defense. Like he's not a standout at all. Right. Like, I think he's like, I just, that's a problem.
now to be fair for the future, right? Cause we're putting, I mean, a lot of this goes on link, on a, oh my gosh, the coach.
Clay Helton.
Like, thank you. A lot of this goes on Clay Helton's recruiting.
Yeah.
And I think on the second level, it goes on to Alex Grinch. If you take a look at the recruiting that USC has done in the future, I mean, they're good. They're bringing in good players. Right. These are five-star, four-star, like very highly rated guys. I think you might see at the linebacker position some guys like Tackett Curtis, Rajon Davis, like very highly recruited guys come in and play that are sophomores and freshmen just because the guys in front of them aren't that good. I mean, like Eric Gentry is like 6'7", 240 pounds. And like, he's playing inside linebacker and you're just going like, he's just, the fact that he was one of their best linebackers speaks volumes of what this defense was.
Yeah.
Cause he was just a weird, like probably a nice guy. Just a, like, look, we all have different bodies and different shapes, but like, it's like, he should be a linebacker. That's what he should be. And like, you know, he started on defense and though he's playing defense. The thing though, that gives me a little bit of less heartburn is when we go into the secondary, because they have recruited well on that front. Like you mentioned, Christian Roland Wallace, Damani Jackson was a five-star, like true sophomore who's likely going to start. Sierra Wright is like, they brought in Jacoby Covington. I actually think that there's like, I don't know if Max Williams is good. He wasn't good when he was playing safety, but I think that there's, unlike UCLA, where we take a look and we go, okay, I can see the starting four,
right,
and I don't like it, but I can't see the next guy. Here, I think you have some room to work with when it comes to the secondary, which is kind of what you're going to need in the Pac-12 for the most
part. Well, I think with their schedule, right? Like, I think you'd rather have, you know, like, given who they're going to have to go out and play, you know, like, and their schedule is wildly backloaded, right? Like, their schedule, like, you're... like they start out, they don't play a team that is rated below 85 until they get Arizona on October 7th, right? Like they start out with San Jose State, Nevada, Stanford, Arizona State, and Colorado. Like that, they've got an on-ramp to figure things out a little bit this season, but we're not going to know a darn thing other than like here, like, you'll know, like, we'll know, like, if it's like last year where all of a sudden, like, man, like, you know, Stanford had a decent game against USC, right? Like, they turned the ball over a bunch of stupid times in that game.
Oh, that's right.
But they moved the ball around. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like, and that told you, like, oh, this defense, like, and like, all the USC fans were like, oh, they're generating turnovers. I was like, no, this is bad, right? And this is like, we'll find out, like, if they're really bad, we'll find things out, but we may not know how good they are until that Arizona game. Cause Arizona, like we talked about, it's going to come in and throw the ball around. I think Arizona's offensive line is going to be better than they were last year. I'm not going to say a lot better, but I think they're going to be better. And I think that Arizona's offense is going to put pressure on USC, and we'll get to see where they're at. I think the biggest thing to keep an eye on for this USC team as we head into the back half of the schedule, because I think you're right, I don't think that they're going to be great at stopping the run, is, but how much pass rush can they generate? Because they're good. Yeah. That's what they're like, with the exception of like when they get to go against, now that they get to go play Notre Dame at Notre Dame, then they get Utah at home. That's the one where it's like Utah might just be running the ball down their throats in that game. But after,
and they're smart enough to do it, right? They're not going to mess around with the
pass. That's true.
Outside of lighting up their safeties again. Holy smokes. That tight end, Dalton Kincaid, is still running now. Like, he just continues to go through the holy. He's like Forrest Gump.
The same. It's like the same dumb bend route, and you're like, do you guys not see this coming? Like, just every single time.
And that's the thing with Alex Grinch, is like, I think the secondary, it should be better because the talent is here.
Right.
And I'm worried about the safety because they brought in that Ohio State safety who frankly wasn't good. Right. And like, I think you mentioned him not being good, and Hitlade mentioned him not being good. And he wasn't good, but I mean, they've recruited well at that position. And if they can't figure out the secondary, like, Grinch is gone and he needs to be gone, because that's where the strength
is. No, I mean, if we're talking about like Christian Roland Wallace potentially being a backup, like the guy legitimately is, I think, a good power five player. I think could potentially like talk himself into being a very late round draft pick. Like, if you're talking about like him's like, they're okay. Like, I mean, if he's your nickel or he's potentially coming in, you know, in dime, like, you're doing fine. The trouble, I think, is it's generating a pass rush. But like, I say that as like, oh yeah, like they are going to get Oregon. They are going to get Washington. They are going to have to solve stopping the pass. And with Oregon, you're going to have to stop the run a bit too, but they get UCLA to finish the year too. And UCLA is going to run the ball right at them.
It's the truly, truly, I say to you,
right? Like,
you need to stop the run.
So I mean, like, that's where I think that, like, what I was talking about, like, this offense can't leave money on the table. Like, they have to be really good because the schedule ramps up, and I think the defense can be better. And I say that just because, like, I think they were so freaking bad last year. Like, even this weird island of misfit toys in the front six, which is, I actually like UCLA's front six more. And that's saying something. If only because, like, I have a little more faith in what UCLA's got at linebacker. Like, Cobb is fine. You know, and he was really well coached by Knowles, right? And he fit in that Knowles defense. And I thought, you know, but like, beyond that, like, some of these pieces start getting really iffy. I mean, Shane, like you said, like Shane Lee, Eric Gentry, like none of these guys were any darn good. It's, if they can make a
Alabama transfers, Rob, like, I mean, Alabama and Oklahoma, Ohio State transfers just have not panned out.
No, I mean, like, well, I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know.
We did say that about UCLA, though. We penciled in an Alabama transfer. Like, yeah, he'll be fine. So, I get it. UCLA.
He might be. I don't know. They were really pumped. They were really pumped about getting him when they got him out of the portal. I do think, like, I mean, what is tough, I think, too, is you see this, I mean, we'll talk, like, is you see guys that, like, yeah, they may have gone into Georgia as a four-star, right? Like, Bear Alexander, four-star, guy barely played, right? And I'm not saying, like, look, there's some dudes on that Georgia defense, right? Like, I'm not saying it's like, oh, you just show up and make it on the field. That's the way it works, right? Like, that is not the way it works, but it is, like, I think people always kind of operate under the assumption of like, oh man, we got this player, he's going to be really good because he was like this, you know, highly rated. And I'm like, sometimes there's a reason they didn't see the field, and they're transferring not just like, not just because like, oh, I'd like to make the field, like the door may be closed at their current school on them getting in the field. They may not have been able to beat out the guys in their class, and they may have gotten beat out by guys behind them, right? And so like, they've been falling down the depth chart, you know, and that's where I think that Well, I mean, like, it can get a little scary. this is a little scary if I'm USC, because like I think there is reason for optimism. They just shouldn't be this bad. They shouldn't be in the 90s. They should be like at the very worst, they should be in the 30s or 40s. But it's hard to look at this front six and have a ton of confidence that they're going to stop the run. I mean, like, look, I mean, and I mean, I guess if you're, we talked about it a little bit, is like on the schedule, right? Is like the one game to keep an eye on early to get an eye on the run defense is actually Stanford. Troy Taylor ran the ball really well at Sacramento State, and that's a good call. And he's got some decent talent at running back, and I think the offensive line coaching is going to get. I don't know if the talent's still there, but I think the offensive line coaching is going to be better, and the offensive scheme will be better at Stanford. That's the game to keep an eye on to see if you can run on USC early. Now, we may find out that Stanford just is a black hole and it's just not going to work this season, but that's what I would sort of keep an eye on for like the early season game to maybe try to get a read on where USC is going to sit. But like, man, just for them, like, there's like, they're, I mean, it'll be fun. They'll be on, they'll have good time slots down the back half of the season because all the games will be right. Fun and interesting and good. Like, you'll be able to see.
Everybody wants to see those helmets. Yeah right.
USC is going to be on at 3:30 on Saturday a lot towards the end of the season because they're going to be, you know, you've got Arizona, Notre Dame, or not Arizona, maybe not that one, but Notre Dame, Utah. Then you get Cal, so you got a break there. That'll be on late on the Pac-12 network, although USC played them in the stupidest game last year. Washington, Oregon, and then UCLA. Like, yeah. that's tough. even if Caleb Williams is great, that's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I always treat USC with like a little bit of, I always feel like I'm a little bit more judgy about them just because what they can be. I mean, like, and we've talked about this forever, and I think that their lack of being able to carry the conference is a big reason why the conference fell apart. And then them bouncing from the conference once they finally got their house in order is just like, of course, that's what, of course, right, like, all right, fine. Yes, like,
you guys didn't support us the way we knew. We couldn't carry you while you were out there hiring Lynn Swan and like Lane Kiffin. So, yeah. Like,
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm reading through the contract that Swan signed to extend Clay Helton. Right. Like, you know, there's just so many friggin' stupid decisions. So, but like, this is what I mean. Not the defense. I think the defense needs some time. I think it will get there.
Yeah.
I think I just try you. It's gonna get there. And I don't know if Grinch is going to be the defensive coordinator. It's probably going to be somebody else. But the offense is truly. You're freaking right.
It's going to be Pruitt or there's somebody else that's like taking a year off. They're just like, oh, when's that guy going to come back and coach again?
Derek Mason, mm-hmm. Right? With like Derek Mason taking a year off. Yeah. Although he wasn't
great at Oklahoma State, but he's good at Auburn.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that the offense will be fun and it will be really just like USC is going to play college football the way that you want college football to be played on the offensive side and like drink it and take it in and just appreciate it for what it is because there's not a lot of teams in the conference that are as buttoned up as Lincoln Riley will be and this offense will be. And that's exciting. And yeah, the offensive line isn't there, but it's a testament to our faith in Riley. We probably should have said this at the beginning rather than at the end, but it's like our faith in Lincoln Riley to be able to still put together a great offense regardless. And it's just, can you stop anybody? And I just think with the schedule and with the coordinator and with the talent, the answer is no this year. And I just don't think they're going to win the conference.
No.
But they could.
I mean, they're going to be a crazy story though, because they're probably going to run out to 7-0 heading into that game against Utah.
Yeah.
Right. Like I have real questions about Notre Dame this season.
Oh, yeah.
So like they're going to, unless USC goes out and the only game that should even be remotely close is Arizona. Like they should still beat Arizona by 10 or 14.
Yeah.
The only thing that is going to trip them up is if they turn the ball over two or three times against Arizona or Notre Dame. They're probably undefeated going into that Utah. And like, they're going to be a really interesting storyline, you know, like, and they're going to be in some shootouts, you know, but like, I guess we talked, like, they'll have plenty of space to figure it out. But like last year, they kind of did too, because the schedule was a bit easier last season. They didn't have Oregon and Washington, and they kind of didn't figure it out either. So,
anything else to mention, Rob?
No, we're good. I'm trying to get a Penn State preview out tomorrow. I just did preview the Trojans from the advanced stats perspective. That video is up on the YouTube channel. And man, we're close. We're like really close to actual football.
Like week one is like, and then USC plays week zero. Yeah. I think they're a week zero game. Right on. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. We're going to catch